What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, another one bites the dust. We've got another retirement on our hands. Longtime Dallas Cowboys offensive lineman Tyron Smith, he has decided to call it a career this week. Actually, last year, he spent last year with the New York Jets, but he spent the rest of his career with the Dallas Cowboys. And just got to say, he was one of my favorite Cowboys. He was such a fantastic offensive lineman. He was such a huge-ass motherfucker. He was so big that there's this picture of him with a football in his hands, and his hands are so big that he makes this football basically look like a baseball in his hands. And, I mean, he was also so huge that throughout his career, he ended up having some elbow injuries, and so he had to end up wearing braces on his elbows. But not just elbow braces, they were actually knee braces that they had to use as elbow braces because his arms were so fucking big, they were as big as a leg. So Tyron Smith, you know, he was a workhorse, he was a fantastic Cowboy, and I really respect what he did for the organization. Unfortunately, he's not walking away with any type of Super Bowl from us, but you know what? He had a great career. I would imagine he's headed to the Hall of Fame at some point when he gets down the line. But regardless of what happens, I really respected Tyron and really thank him for all the years he put in as a Dallas Cowboy, especially at the offensive line position. Most people don't realize it, but offensive line is probably the most difficult position to play in the NFL because you are responsible for blocking for the quarterback, also, you know, creating lanes for the running backs or for potentially a wide receiver, you know, running through as a running back. You know, they've got the defensive linemen coming at them from the jump. As soon as the ball is hiked, they got dudes right in their face. And, you know, they're coming out of that crouched position and, you know, just offensive linemen are beast, and it's just always crazy to see, you know, they so many of them get beat up like Tyron Smith did over the years, but it doesn't matter. He just was a fantastic lineman, and good luck to you whatever you do in your post-NFL life. All right, so moving on to baseball. In the week of baseball and some notable things that happened throughout the week, beginning on Monday, the Tampa Bay Rays smashed the Boston Red Sox 16-1. They actually had a 9-run third inning that lasted 27 minutes. Actually, is one of the highest scoring games for the Tampa Bay Rays, period. But Diaz had a home run. Meisner had two home runs. Caminero had a home run. It was just a home run fest for the Tampa Bay Rays and against a pretty decent Red Sox team, but they weren't able to get a goddamn thing going in this game. But then on Tuesday night, we're going to be talking about the same matchup, except the Red Sox got the better of the Rays in this one, 7-4. But what we're really talking about is Alex Bregman. I felt like he was going to be a nice, solid pickup for the Red Sox, and he actually had a career game on Tuesday night. He went 5-for-5, something he has never done in his entire career, with two home runs and four RBI, and was a huge reason why they scored so many runs on Tuesday night. Then on Wednesday, Spencer Strider made his return. You know, he ended up having to, he was injured all last year. He's back now, and he doesn't look like he's lost a step. Now, unfortunately, he lost the game. The Braves were playing the Blue Jays. They lost 3-1, but overall, Strider looked good. You know, he started out the game basically same old Strider. But when you're coming back from injury, he hasn't had a lot of spring training. I mean, he did participate in spring training. But, you know, he's coming back from injury, so he's still got to work in his stamina. And you could just kind of tell as the game went on, it was starting to get more difficult for him. So I kind of expect as the season wears on, Strider's going to do what he does, and that's get better. I mean, he was K-ing motherfuckers against Toronto. I mean, he was doing great for the first half of the game. But like I said, he started to fade away as the game went on. But Vlad Guerrero Jr., you know, he just signed that big contract extension. Well, he had a solid game, went 2-for-3 in a home run in a nice solid win for the Toronto Blue Jays. But Spencer Strider is back. He looked pretty solid, but just didn't get the win. And then on Thursday, the Sacramento A's beat the Chicago White Sox 8-0. But to me, that's not really the notable factor of this game. The notable factor is actually Tyler Soderstrom. Tell me if you've ever heard his name before, number one. But number two, did you expect him to lead the league in home runs right now at this point in the season? No, I did not either. And right now he does. He has the lead of home runs with 9 home runs. He hit a home run last night. Seems like he's been hitting a home run in every single game. He's been up there with Aaron Judge all season long. So that just goes to show you he's having a fantastic season to start. Don't know if it's going to last long, but, you know, he's leading the league and you got to talk about him because he's just been really probably the biggest bright spot for the A's right now at this current point in time. But 9 home runs for Tyler Soderstrom on the season. All right, so we've got us NBA playoffs beginning this weekend. You know, the play-in. We had games on Tuesday night, we had games on Wednesday night, and now we have the final play-in games tonight on Friday night, and then the NBA first round playoff begins on Saturday and Sunday. We've got games galore and then littered throughout the rest of the week and all the way until June. Such a glorious time of year. So let's get into what happened in the play-in beginning on Tuesday night between the Orlando Magic and the Atlanta Hawks. The Magic dominated this game. It was not even close at all. They got the win 120-95, and they move on to the first round of the NBA playoffs because of that. Banchero had 17 points. Wagner had 13 points and 13 rebounds. Cole Anthony had 26 points. So this was just a really solid, dominating game for Orlando and a really pathetic game from the Atlanta Hawks. Then on Tuesday night, we had the Western Conference matchup between the Golden State Warriors and the Memphis Grizzlies. It was pretty much all Golden State for the majority of the game until the fourth quarter. Memphis started to make a run, started to close the gap just a bit, but Steph Curry and Jimmy Butler do what they do in the playoffs, and they were able to hold off the Grizzlies from a 20-point comeback is what they were trying to make there. But Golden State held on for a 121-116 win. That means Golden State Warriors are moving on to the first round of the playoffs. Jimmy Butler was playoff Jimmy, 38 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, and Steph Curry was just Steph Curry, 37 points, 8 rebounds, and Golden State Warriors moving on to the NBA first round. And on Wednesday night, the second set of play-in games, the first Eastern Conference matchup was between the Miami Heat and the Chicago Bulls, and Miami dominated this one. Chicago didn't even look like they were a halfway decent team in this one. Miami just blew by them, 109-90. Tyler Hero had a fantastic game, 38 points. Andrew Wiggins also dropped 20 points. And Bam Adebayo had a double-double with 15 points and 12 rebounds. Then the Western Conference matchup. Oh, so that means Miami actually moves on to the second set of play-in games on Friday. And then the Western Conference matchup between the Dallas Mavericks and the Sacramento Kings was all Dallas all night. They smashed the Kings 120-106. Anthony Davis had 27 points and 9 rebounds. Klay Thompson had 23 points as well. And Dallas moves on to the second play-in game. So our play-in games for tonight for the Eastern Conference matchup is the Miami Heat versus the Atlanta Hawks. Miami, they just know how to win in the playoffs. They just have always historically been a really solid playoff team. That's why Eric Spoelstra still has his job, just simply because he knows how to win. He just knows how to keep his team in it. And once they hit the playoffs, it doesn't matter how bad they were playing prior to the playoffs or what happened in the regular season. They just know how to get it going. Whereas the Atlanta Hawks, they showed me shit in that last game, and they've showed me shit really over their existence, basically. So I've got Miami winning this one simply because they're playing the better basketball right now. So I've got them moving on to the NBA first round. And then the Dallas Mavericks versus the Memphis Grizzlies, that is the Western Conference matchup for the last play-in game. This one's difficult because I think these are both very similar teams where they've had their turmoil, but they've got their really good, solid players who can win. I'm going with Dallas. I don't know why. I do think either one of these teams, it's basically a coin flip to me. I'm really just going with Dallas simply because of Anthony Davis. I think a lot of people have forgotten about Anthony Davis since the trade from the Lakers. And I don't think a lot of people realize how damn good Anthony Davis is. As a Lakers fan, I've always respected Anthony Davis prior to becoming a Laker. Then as his time as a Laker, loved the dude. He's just an excellent basketball player, and he does know how to win come playoff time. He has a lot of playoff experience, especially with his time with the Lakers. And the Grizzlies just don't. And they've also been in turmoil, but I just kind of feel like Anthony Davis is going to be a huge factor in this one. Don't be shocked if he has some like monster double-double type of game with like 38 points and like 17 rebounds or some shit like that. I mean, just don't be shocked if he does that. So I'm going with Dallas in that matchup, and I've got them moving on to the first round of the NBA playoffs. So let's get into the first round matchups that are set for sure. And then we also will talk about the ones that aren't set just yet, because to me, it doesn't really matter. I'm taking the number one overall seeds in both of those matchups, spoiler alert. But let's get into the Western Conference NBA first round matchups, beginning both Saturday and Sunday and littered throughout the week. So our first matchup is going to be the Dallas Mavericks versus the Oklahoma City Thunder. Obviously, I picked Dallas, but if Memphis wins, it will be Memphis. But either way, whoever Oklahoma City plays, it doesn't matter to me. They're going to demolish whoever it is, because Oklahoma City has been the best team all season long. I expect them. I don't look at this team as like a one-and-done team or as like some surprise flop team. I expect them to battle it out every single round, every single game, and to be good, as good as they've been from start to finish. They're going to be a good-ass team. Dallas, they haven't really been able to grow as a team. Now, while they do have Anthony Davis, and I forgot to mention Klay Thompson as well, another dude with championship pedigree and who knows how to win in the playoffs as well. But with that being said, I still think Oklahoma City's the better offensive team, the better defensive team. SGA's playing, he should easily win that MVP this year. You know, they've got great bench players. They've got good young guys. They're great in the paint. Whereas Dallas, they still haven't really found their groove with Anthony Davis yet. It seems to be like up and down every single game, and you're not really going to win a series doing that. So the inconsistencies for me with Dallas, and just Oklahoma City is easily the better team. That's why they're the number one overall seed. I have Oklahoma City winning easily in five games, and I believe that even if they end up playing the Memphis Grizzlies as well. Then the next matchup in the first round of the Western Conference, we have the Golden State Warriors versus the Houston Rockets. I think this sucks for Houston, simply because I knew whoever Golden State was going up against, they're going to be a difficult task for anybody. Even if they lose, Golden State is going to work you in this series. And if they are on the losing end of this, that means it's probably going to go seven games, in my opinion. They are not going to be a team you're going to sweep on out of here. They're going to be difficult. Now, with that being said, I think they are head and shoulders above the Houston Rockets. I haven't believed in the Houston Rockets at all this season. They've had a phenomenal year. It's just, to me, they need a star player. They're just about, I would say, two players away from being a legitimate squad. Plus, they need to grow, and they're going to need to get some playoff experience. And this is what this game is, or this series is going to be, in my opinion, for Houston, is they're just going to gain some experience going up against one of the most veteran-savvy dynastic teams we have in the league today, and that is the Golden State Warriors. They've got Steph Curry. They've got Jimmy Butler. They've got Green. They've just got a fantastic team here, and I actually think it's going to be pretty easy for Golden State in this one. I think Houston's going to be way in over their head. They're not really going to know what to do in all the tight situations. Golden State easily knows what to do in all the tight situations. They know how to win. So I've got Golden State rolling in this series five games. And then the third matchup we have in the NBA Western Conference first round, we have Minnesota Timberwolves versus the Los Angeles Lakers. Minnesota has been one of the hottest teams heading into the playoffs, and the Lakers actually have been too. They've been playing excellent basketball. The big three with Luka, LeBron, and Austin Reeves, they seem to be getting better and better each and every game, and I think that just is a recipe for disaster for the rest of the league, but a recipe for amazement if you are a Lakers fan like I am. I am looking forward to this. Now, I don't think Minnesota is going to be a team we just roll over because, you know, we got You got Anthony Edwards having a phenomenal year. Gobert, he's finally turned it on the second half of the season. And then Julius Randle, he is now healthy and playing fantastic on the defensive side of the ball. And Randle used to play for the Lakers, so this might be kind of one of those things where he's like, hey, yo, remember, you got rid of me, and here I am. But with that being said, I think the Lakers' big three is going to be way, way, way too much for the Minnesota Timberwolves to handle for a seven-game series. Luka, he's just been getting every game. It's like he is knocking down every shot he is getting. He's playing well on the defensive side of the ball. And then LeBron. LeBron is just there. It's so funny to see LeBron not get all the attention like Luka gets. And just to have your second-tier guy be LeBron James, the dude who can absolutely take over the game, is your second man behind Luka. So that's going to be way too much. And Austin Reeves, he's another handful as well. So it's just, I think it's going to be way too much for anybody, but definitely the Timberwolves in this series. I have the Lakers winning this series in five games. And then the last matchup we have in the Western Conference first round playoff matchups, we have the Los Angeles Clippers versus the Denver Nuggets. I believe this is going to be the best matchup in the Western Conference first round, simply because both of these teams match up very well against each other. The Clippers, they always choke, though. To me, you can't trust anything about them. And even though Denver fired their coach heading right into the playoffs, I don't think that really matters, at least in this matchup. It might matter for the long run of the playoffs, but I think Denver can actually get over the hump, at least in the first round. The Clippers will give them all they got, and they will make this a good series, but I think they're just going to fall short. I mean, first of all, James Harden, you never know what you're going to get from him in the playoffs. Just like on the opposite side of the court, with the Denver Nuggets, we have Russell Westbrook, who's the exact same player, where they're both capable of going off, but once the playoffs hit, you're like, where the fuck did they go? So it's very par for the course for the both of them to disappear, so who knows what's going to happen with them. But Westbrook's he's a bench guy. He's coming off the bench, whereas Harden is a starter, so that could be a difference. But to me, Jokic, he's been having an MVP season himself. He has not lost a step at all, so I expect him to have a phenomenal series. Jamal Murray, not sure what's going to happen with him because he's coming into the playoffs injured, so that could be a problem. But, you know, they still have this team's won a championship before, whereas the Clippers, all they're known for doing is choking. And so I trust the Nuggets more in this matchup. So I'm going with the Nuggets in seven in this series. So moving on to the Eastern Conference first round matchups. We have the Miami Heat versus the Cleveland Cavaliers. Of course, if the Heat don't win, this will be the Atlanta Hawks, but to me, it doesn't matter. Cleveland's going to roll over whoever it is. Cleveland plays great on the defensive side of the ball. They have no issue scoring on the offensive side of the ball, and I don't think they're going to be one of those teams that gets kicked out in the first round or upset or any type of thing like that. I think they're going to have zero issues getting past Miami. I've got Cleveland winning this series in five games. Then the next matchup we have is the Orlando Magic versus the Boston Celtics. I think the Celtics, they are coming into the playoffs as one of the strongest teams. They are the defending champs, so you cannot overlook this team at all. And they're healthy, and they're just playing great basketball right now. And the Magic, they've got a lot of growing to do. And so I think this is going to be a very easy series for the Boston Celtics to win. I've got the Celtics winning in five, and I wouldn't be shocked if it was a sweep in this series simply because Boston is that good. It's just I'm giving Orlando one win. They could get one win in this series. Then the next series we have in the Eastern Conference first round matchups, the Detroit Pistons versus the New York Knicks. I think this is going to be a great series. New York is actually, they got Brunson back and he looks good since his injury. And I think that's a huge, huge, huge positive for them because they cannot win anything without Brunson. But Karl Anthony Towns, he's playing great in the wingman role right next to Brunson. And Josh Hart, he has had a career year for himself, especially on the defensive side of the ball. So I'm expecting this to be a battle back and forth between both Detroit and New York. But Detroit, they have been the biggest turnaround this season. You know, they were the worst team last year, and they completely turned it around. I mean, they've been one of the most consistent teams this year. They may not have won their division, but they were in it from start to finish. They had great winning streaks. They had some great wins against some good teams. And Caleb Cunningham, he's just had a breakout year. And they're just a really fantastic team. Now, with that being said, to me, this is just going to come down to who I trust more. Now, neither one of these teams has won shit over the years. So it's not like you can look at one and go, oh, yeah, they were in the Eastern Conference Finals last year, so they could just bounce back from that. No, no, both of these teams, neither one of them is neither one of them has any, like, winning history. So they don't really know what to expect. If it comes down to, like, the game-winning shots, it's all new to them. And I think it's going to be a battle every single game. But for some reason, I'm leaning Detroit in this series. I've got Detroit winning in 7 games, mostly because I trust them more, because they've been more consistent this season. The Knicks have had their issues with injuries. If Brunson even suffers the slightest injury, it's definitely going to be a setback for this team. And I have Detroit moving on from the first round. And the last Eastern Conference first round matchup we have is the Milwaukee Bucks versus the Indiana Pacers. I think this should be a good matchup as well. It normally is a good matchup between these two teams. You know, Milwaukee has had their ups and their downs, but Giannis has been Giannis all season long. He has had a monster season. It's just you haven't really heard about it because Milwaukee has not been good. They've been up and down. They have been probably the most inconsistently good team all year, meaning they go on a good winning streak, then they're down on a losing streak, and then they're up and down, and they go up and down, but they're still there every single time, and you just can't count them out because Giannis is playing out of his mind. Then you turn to the Indiana Pacers. Halliburton, he's had a solid year, but he's had better years, and I just kind of feel like the Pacers are coming into this one not really confident, not really looking that strong or great. And I just think Milwaukee's the better team. And so I'm going with Milwaukee in this matchup in 6 games in this series. All right. So moving on to my list this week, we're going to continue with my NBA GOATs list. And so this week it is the top 10 NBA GOATs of the 2000s decade. I don't want to just say the 2000s. I don't know. That sounds weird. And then I also hate when it's called the early aughts. So I'm just going to call it the 2000s decade. This is, like I said, in the 90s one, the 90s was probably just overall the greatest year for NBA, period. But for me personally, the 2000s decade is the greatest decade of basketball for me because it was the dominance of Kobe Bryant. I am a Lakers fan, and not only am I a Lakers fan, I love Kobe. Kobe is my favorite basketball player of all time. He is why I watch basketball. He is why I love basketball, and everything about him was so great for the league, in my personal opinion. But also, there were so many standout guys in this era who just not only dominated like Kobe did, but man, we got some legends in this era. So, and we only have one from this era who is still currently playing. And no, he's not number one, but just trust me, once we hit the 2010s next week, you'll be okay because he's going to be number one then. But there's only one guy on here who is still currently playing in today's league. So let's get started with number 10 on my top 10 NBA GOATs of the 2000 decade, Tracy McGrady. He played with the Toronto Raptors from 1997 to 2000, the Orlando Magic from 2000 to 2004, the Houston Rockets from 2004 to 2010. He played shooting guard and small forward for his career, and probably one of the most prolific scorers, especially of this era. I mean, you put the ball in Tracy McGrady's hand, even if there's a minimal amount of time, you cannot count out Tracy McGrady. I mean, he has a game where he scored 13 points in 35 seconds and they won. And there was actually a couple of games. Now, 13 points, 35 seconds, that was his best. But there was another one he had with the Magic. And it wasn't 13 points, 35 seconds, but it was this small amount of time where he scored a whole bunch of points and they ended up winning. So he was just the king of, it doesn't matter how much time's on the clock, boom, don't let me score because I can score. But he is a 7-time All-NBA selection, 2-time scoring champion. His career numbers, 18,381 points, 5,276 rebounds, and 4,161 assists. He just was electric on the court from start to finish, too. It didn't matter what team he was with, you just could not count out Tracy McGrady. Unfortunately, his career basically petered out due to injuries, but the man was a beast when it came to scoring. Then at number 9 on my top 10 NBA GOATs of the 2000 decade, Jason Kidd played point guard for the Dallas Mavericks from 1994 to 1996, then the Phoenix Suns from 1996 to 2001, then the New Jersey Nets from 2001 to 2008, and then went back to the Dallas Mavericks 2008 to 2012 and ended his career with the New York Knicks 2012 to 2013. He won a championship with the Dallas Mavericks on his second go-round in 2011. He is a 6-time All-NBA selection, 9-time All-Defense. Now, we all know Jason Kidd was a killer on the court. I mean, as a point guard, this is one of the most perennial point guards you will ever see. He could score, but on the defensive side of the ball, this guy was a bad motherfucker, as these 9-time All-Defensive Awards show. He was Rookie of the Year in 1995, also a 5-time assist leader as well throughout his career. So he was an all-around player. He could score, he could assist, and he could play defense. His career numbers, 17,529 points, 8,725 rebounds, and 12,091 assists. And if you don't know, which if you're an NBA fan, you should know, he's been coaching ever since he retired as well. So he's still in the league, still making his mark. Unfortunately, he got completely railroaded by his current team, the Dallas Mavericks that he's with, because he didn't know that Luka was getting traded. And the day Luka got traded, I felt like it was, who do you feel sorry for most? You start with, to me, number 1 was Luka, number 2 was AD, number 3 was Jason fucking Kidd, because that guy looked so shell-shocked at that press conference. It's like, dude, even he didn't know this was going to happen. He just lost his best player. Now what the fuck's going to happen here? So, Jason Kidd, his playing career, he was fantastic and a great all-around point guard. Then at number 8 on my top 10 NBA GOATs of the 2000 decade, Paul Pierce played small forward and shooting guard for the Boston Celtics from 1998 to 2013. Now, the thing about Paul Pierce being on this list, he wasn't the greatest scorer. He wasn't the greatest defender. He wasn't the greatest anything, really. He was a good basketball player. Don't get me wrong. He was clutch. He was excellent. But what it is he just was the dude who started it all with the dynasty for this Boston Celtics team. They dominated the East for many, many years, and it started with Paul Pierce. He stuck with them through the shitty years. There were so many times where they were like, we're going to trade Paul Pierce, we're going to trade Paul Pierce. No, they stuck with Paul Pierce. They ended up making some moves for Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen, and boom, all of a sudden they won a championship in 2008, and they went to a couple championships. They were just the team of the Eastern Conference for many years, and Paul Pierce was the face of it. And so to me, that means something, you know, that yes, you could be the greatest scorer. Yes, you can be the greatest defender. But I mean, he was the heart of this Boston Celtics team, which is why I put him on here, because his career stats don't really compare to everybody else on this list. But I mean, honestly, when I did all my research and especially on the statistical side of things, Paul Pierce actually is a top 10 player when you just consider stats straight up. That's it. But to me, I obviously consider a lot of factors in here. And yes, mattering to your team and being the heart of your team and sticking with the team your entire career like Pierce did. He just was a fantastic player, and he absolutely had to be on this list for me. He has a 4-time All-NBA selection. His career numbers, 26,397 points, 7,527 rebounds, and 4,708 assists. Then at number 7 on my top 10 NBA GOATs of the 2000 decade, Allen Iverson played point guard and shooting guard for the Philadelphia 76ers from 1996 to 2006 and the Denver Nuggets from 2006 to 2008. And real talk, if you watched Allen Iverson, he was legitimately one of the most electric basketball players of all time. As a matter of fact, if I were to make like a comparison to what kind of a player he was compared to another sport, but just the type of, just the electricity he brought to the court, Allen Iverson to me was like the Deion Sanders of football. Deion Sanders was prime time. He was electric. He did it all. He was just a fantastic player. And that's how I feel about Allen Iverson. Allen Iverson was electric. If you miss the Allen Iverson years, you just don't get what type of a point guard this guy was. His crossover was beautiful. I mean, this dude has sunned Michael Jordan. Like, he's broke Michael Jordan's legs. That's basically what he has done. But he was the point guard of this era for sure. Even though I had my selection of point guards, AI was going above everybody in the point guard department for me on this list. But he did win MVP in 2001, seven-time All-NBA selection, Rookie of the Year in 1997, four-time scoring champ, three-time steals champ as well. That's another one of the things about AI. Yeah, he was great with this crossover and could just kill you in the paint, but he would steal he just was such a steal, man. He just would come in there and just steal everything from everybody. He just was a fantastic player, just in all ways, shapes, and forms. In the sport of basketball, his career numbers, 24,368 points, 3,394 rebounds, and 5,624 assists. Number six on my top 10 NBA GOATs of the 2000 decade, Dirk Nowitzki, played power forward from the Dallas Mavericks from 1998 to 2019. He finally won a championship in 2011, won the MVP in 2007, 12-time All-NBA selection. He became a part of the 50-40-90 club in 2007. If you don't know what that means, to dumb it down for you, it just means you're an excellent shooter. And basically, very, very, very few players have ever been in the 50-40-90 club, and Nowitzki's one of them. But nobody, like, he is a Dallas Maverick through and through. He was drafted by them. He retired with them. He stuck with them in the ups and the downs. He took them to, I mean, that MVP season in 2007, oh my God. What a year he had. Like, I remember that year. He could not miss a shot. It was nuts. He won so many games just by being the ultimate player on the court, especially in this era. I mean, some of these dudes I've already rattled off, but I mean, the four above him, especially one player on here, it's like crazy the amount of Hall of Famers and great players we had in this 2000 decade. But Dirk, he was one of the best of this era, and he just was so consistent and so fantastic, one of the greatest shooters of all time. His career numbers, he has 31,560 points, 11,489 rebounds, and 3,651 assists. At number five on my top 10 NBA GOATs of the 2000 decade, I know this is going to be very upsetting that I did not put him at one, but there's a reason why he's not number one, because the four above him, A, deserve to be above him, but B, he did not dominate this era. He actually dominates the next era. So I'm going to give you a spoiler alert here and now. He's going to be number one on the next list. Trust me, because that's when he won his championships. But he didn't win shit in this era, and that is LeBron James. I am not dissing the dude. As a matter of fact, putting him at five is, in my opinion, perfect, because he didn't win any championships in this era. Sorry, everybody else did. He did not start winning them until he went to Miami, which began in 2010. So sorry, y'all. He ain't number one in this era, at least for me. Currently, he is the only player who still currently plays in the league. He plays small forward and power forward, but basically he could play every position on the court. He played with Cleveland from 2003 to 2010, then with the Miami Heat from 2010 to 2014, then went back to Cleveland from 2014 to 2018, and now he has been with the Los Angeles Lakers from 2018 and still currently plays with the Los Angeles Lakers. He is a four-time champion, won his championships in 2012, 13, 16, and 20, which is why he is not above these next four guys in this era, because he did not start winning championships until after. He is a four-time MVP in 2009, 2010, 2012, and 2013. He is a 20-time All-NBA selection, five-time All-Defense. He won Rookie of the Year in 2004. He is currently the all-time scoring leader, and I'm not going to rattle off on his career stats because his career stats are continuing to grow, of course. But, you know, he's been fantastic since day one that he hit the league, and, you know, to have his career span as far as it has now, he is on this all-decade list. As I said, I'm already telling y'all he's going to be number one on the 2010s list. That's for damn sure, because ain't nobody dominated that era like LeBron did. But playing with all these great players on this list helped him become the greatness that he is. Now, at number four on my top 10 NBA GOATs. Jesus Christ. I have just a fucking stroke or what there? To my top 10 NBA GOATs of the 2000 decade, number four is Kevin Garnett. He played power forward for the Minnesota Timberwolves from 1995 to 2007, and then played with the Boston Celtics from 2007 to 2013, the Brooklyn Nets from 2013 to 2015, and then ended his career with the Minnesota Timberwolves and from 2015 to 2016. Nobody dominated this era on the defensive side of the ball like Kevin Garnett did. When he was with the Timberwolves, I don't think a lot of people remember this, but I do, because the Lakers had to go toe-to-toe against this Minnesota Timberwolves team every fucking year for the number one overall seed. It was a battle every single year, and Kevin Garnett is the reason why. Then he gets traded to Boston. He finally wins a championship there in 2008, but it doesn't matter. The dude is, you know, Paul Pierce was the heart of this team, but Kevin Garnett was the beast of this team, and he was a fantastic player his entire career. Like I said, he won a championship in 2008 with the Boston Celtics. He was an MVP in 2004. That was when he was with the Timberwolves, and I remember that 04 year, like, he just smashed and obliterated everybody that year. 9-time All-NBA selection, Defensive Player of the Year in 2008, 12-time All-Defense, 4-time rebounding champ. His career numbers: 26,071 points, 14,662 rebounds, and 5,445 assists. Then at number three on my top 10 NBA GOATs of the 2000 decade, number three is my second favorite player behind Kobe Bryant. I watched this guy from start to finish as well. As a matter of fact, I say it all the time. I have not enjoyed the NBA since these two guys retired, Kobe and Tim Duncan. Yes, he did not play for my Lakers, but I do not care. I loved everything about Tim Duncan. Played power forward center for the San Antonio Spurs from 1997 to 2016. This guy was a silent killer. You did not even know Tim Duncan was playing in the game because he was just always quiet. But the dude would dominate. He was basically like Nikola Jokic. Because, you know, Jokic, he dominates the game, but he don't say much. He ain't really talking shit. He ain't really in your face. Not a lot of people can talk about him, or, like, not a lot of people really know him other than real legitimate NBA fans. But Tim Duncan was the dude of this era. It was Kobe, Shaq, and Tim Duncan dominating this era. Then, of course, Garnett as well. But, I mean, these Kobe, Shaq, and Timmy got many rings, whereas KG only got that one. So that's why I just already rattled off my top three right there. But three is Timmy, 5-time champion. As a matter of fact, I think I could say this, greatest power forward ever, hands fucking down. He won championships in 1999, 2003, 2005, 2007, and 2014. As a matter of fact, Tim Duncan, is who changed this San Antonio Spurs organization around completely. Turned them into a legitimate franchise. They were always that franchise that was just there, you know? Like I mentioned, they got George Gervin, who basically started this gangsta shit. He was a fantastic player, but they never won a championship with him. Then comes along David Robinson, dominating motherfucker, cannot win a championship. Then they draft Tim Duncan. And that's when they start winning all the championships. All 5 championships have happened when Tim Duncan was there for the San Antonio Spurs. Tim Duncan retires, they are irrelevant again. So to me, Tim Duncan really, really changed everything about the San Antonio Spurs as far as historically. He is a 2-time MVP, won his MVPs in 2002 and 2003, 15-time All-NBA selection, 15-time All-Defense, Rookie of the Year in 98, and he was just such an all-around player too, because not only will he kill you defensively, but he could score. He was clutch. He made many, 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 many clutch shots. That's why I'm saying Tim Duncan, loved Dude's career, loved his career. I could not get enough of Tim Duncan, even though they were a rival of the Lakers. Man, I could not get enough of Tim Duncan. That dude was one of my favorites to ever play the game. Career numbers, 26,496 points, 15,091 rebounds, and 3,020 blocks. Then at number two on my top 10 NBA GOATs of the 2000 decade, Shaquille O'Neal. Yes, he was on the last decade list as well, at the same exact spot. Played center with the Orlando Magic from 1992 to 1996, Los Angeles Lakers from 96 to 2004, the Miami Heat from 2004 to 2008, and then just ended his career, you know, going from team to team to team. But that doesn't matter. He is a legend, one of the greatest to ever do it, but definitely in this decade, one of the greatest to do it as well. So dominating with he and Kobe with the Lakers. Four-time champion, 2000, 2001, 2002, and 2006. The first three with the Lakers, the last one with the Miami Heat. He won MVP in 2000, 14-time All-NBA selection, three-time All-Defense, Rookie of the Year in 93, two-time scoring champion, and yeah, just all-around fantastic player. Career numbers, 28,596 points, 13,099 rebounds, and 2,732 blocks. But at number one on the top 10 NBA GOATs of the 2000 decade, there ain't nobody else who should be at number one on this list, and that is Kobe Bean Bryant. My favorite motherfucking player of all time, but that's not why he's number one. Come on, y'all. You know nobody dominated this era more than Kobe. I mean, yeah, he had Shaq. But then Shaq went away, and guess what? He still won championships. As a matter of fact, Kobe won all his championships in this era. He was scoring 81 points. Not just 81 points. The dude just could not be stopped all the time. He played shooting guard for the Los Angeles Lakers from 1996 to 2016. Five-time NBA champion, 2000, 2001, 2002, 2009 and 2010, my favorite of the five. MVP in 2008. 15-time All-NBA selection, 12-time All-Defense. That's right, all defense. Don't fucking forget, he may be able to drop 81 points, which is the second most points ever in a game, but he can knock your ass around on defense. And his defense got better as he aged. That's what I loved about Kobe Bryant. He got better, and he just would go out there. Everything about Kobe was so great to me. You remember the time he freaking tears his Achilles and just goes out and takes the free throw shots? I remember that. I remember his last game against the Denver Nuggets. You know, I'm watching it just because they're playing for nothing. Lakers ain't going to the playoffs at all, but this is Kobe's last fucking game. He's going out of G. You know he's going out of G. What did he do? Drop 60 points in a comeback win, by the way, because that's another thing about Kobe. You know, I love it because now that he's dead, all the Kobe haters just change their fucking tune on my dude Kobe Bryant. I've had Kobe's back since day one. You have no idea how many arguments I have been in over Kobe Bryant since day one. LeBron, 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 LeBron. And don't get me wrong, LeBron is a fantastic fucking player. But guess what? Kobe Bean Bryant dominated this era. He was the king of this era. Kobe was a killer. He was a killer on the court. He was so much fun to watch. He was just, love Kobe. Love Kobe Bean Bryant. And I remember in this era, he throws up too many shots. He throws up too many shots. He's not team player. He throws up too many shots. Now all of a sudden Steph Curry doesn't throw up too many shots, right? We're all cool with that now. I'm cool with it. I always been cool with it. But y'all always been calling Kobe selfish, but now that Kobe's dead, he gets the respect, which is really, really amusing to me. As a matter of fact, I never get in arguments over Kobe Bryant. I'll tell you what. So I grew up in Reno, Nevada. I was born in San Jose, California, grew up in Reno, Nevada, and then moved here to Austin, Texas. I've lived here for 17 years now. The day I moved here, the first second I wore a Lakers anything, it is like, because this is Spurs country, and this is the height of their battle. Everybody wanted to argue with me over Kobe. You see me wearing a Kobe jersey. You see me wearing Lakers. Every motherfucker wants to, bah, 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 bah. Ooh, that was so selfish. Kobe, Kobe, da boo boo, da papa, da zizi. They all sounded like absolute fucking morons for years. Now that Kobe's dead, ain't nobody saying shit. That's because y'all know. That's because y'all know you were a bunch of fucking melodramatic bitches who were real upset that Kobe wasn't on your team. That's what the fuck it was. That's what it was, y'all, and I know it. Because Kobe Bean Bryant is just one of the greatest to ever do it. And of this decade, he is number one. So his career numbers, 33,643 points, 7,047 rebounds, and 6,306 assists. Rest in peace, Kobe, and my favorite fucking player. I just loved everything that he and Timmy did. Tim Duncan and Kobe Bryant just loved what they did for the game. So my top 10 NBA GOATs from the 2000 decade are number 10, Tracy McGrady, number 9, Jason Kidd, number 8, Paul Pierce, number 7, Allen Iverson, number 6, Dirk Nowitzki, number 5, LeBron James, number 4, Kevin Garnett, number 3, Tim Duncan, number 2, Shaquille O'Neal, and number 1, Kobe Bean Bryant. All right, y'all, enjoy the weekend of sports. We have us NBA playoffs, y'all, and this is just the start of fantastic basketball shoved down our throats every single day, and I can't fucking wait. So enjoy the weekend of sports, and go Lakers, bitches. It's Luka the Dawn time.